WBAI.org on the web. This is a listener-sponsored community radio station providing you a Pacifica state of mind since 1960. The previous program was The Gary Null Show, heard Monday through Friday at noon. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind coming up at the 1 p.m. hour, followed by The Artsy Fartsy Show at the 2 p.m. hour. And once again, for those people who want to donate and want to continue to donate to this radio station and just is on the go, well, you can always text to donate. Texting WBAI to the number 41444. Once again, text WBAI to the number 41444 on your smartphone. You send that link. You send that text over. In return, you will receive a link on your smartphone. You open up that link on your smartphone, and it will just say, and it will open up into a page, and it will ask you how much you want to donate. And you can donate starting as little as $5 all the way up. Okay, with all that said, stay tuned for The Positive Mind coming up.
Hi, everybody. Ben Starr and Kevin O'Donohue here with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we have two guests for you, one you know and one we're going to introduce you to. We have, returning to the show, Paige Ballenbaum of the Motherhood Center. Paige, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to see you again. And Paige, you've brought your colleague Catherine Berndorf. Catherine, thanks for being here today.
Lovely to be here.
And we're going to continue this discussion that we've been having on motherhood and femininity in general, but specifically today, motherhood. And we're very happy that you could both be here from the Motherhood Center. Kevin, I'm so happy to see you.
Good
as always.
Good to see you, Ben. Nice to be here. And new motherhood, not just motherhood, but new motherhood.
Yeah, it's certainly a topic that I think many people can relate to, whatever walk of life you come from, right? Everyone has kids at some point, eventually.
Everybody has a mother.
Everybody has a mother, that's for sure.
Or had one.
Yeah. So, thanks for being with us, and thank you to our guests for being back with us again.
Yeah, so we want to talk about specific issues today. First of all, it's a privilege to have a reproductive psychiatrist in the house, because I never heard that term until Paige emailed me that that's what you do, and we thought we'd need to get on a reproductive psychiatrist. Yes, you people in the WBA audience are hearing a reproductive psychiatrist maybe for the first time. So tell us about what it is to be a reproductive psychiatrist, what kind of patients you see, and what you do.
Great. Well, there aren't a lot of us, so I'll tell you that. So most people like you probably haven't heard of that. They've heard of psychiatry, but not specifically reproductive psychiatry. So it's pretty much everything at the interface of OBGYN and psychiatry. I couldn't decide if I wanted to be an OB or a psychiatrist.
Okay.
Right? So I married the two and became a reproductive psychiatrist. That's an easy way to say it, right?
Perfect.
To remember. But what I actually do is I treat the emotional side of everything on the reproductive spectrum. So from menses to menopause, and then pregnancy and postpartum in between. So does that make sense,
covers
right?
It all.
So the emotional side, not the physical. I'm not doing exams. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing surgery. I'm doing the psychological piece and medications and all the biological things that affect one's psychology and emotionality on that spectrum during the woman's life cycle.
Okay. And we learned last time Paige was here that estimated one in five women, new mothers, suffer from something called postpartum depression. So, doctor, is that mostly what you do, or do you deal with women who are really struggling and dealing with postpartum depression? Is that the most typical case?
It is now. Yeah. I used to do a lot of PMS, PMDD, I don't know if those familiar with perimenopause. Now I've gotten super narrow. So in addition to learning about reproductive psychiatrists, they're also more specifically what I'm doing now is perinatal psychiatry.
So what does that mean?
So that's before, during, and after pregnancy. So it just got – I narrowed that
– okay.
Right?
Right.
So it's narrowed down. So, yes. So right now, most of what I do is related to dealing – helping women who are pregnant and postpartum.
What are the biggest challenges, the biggest psychological challenges of a pregnancy?
There are so many, Paige, right?
Well, what are the top three, if you can? I mean, if there is such
sure.
a thing.
Well, I would say one of the biggest things – I mean, so there are differences between the pregnancy and postpartum part, because I think when you're pregnant, you still don't know what it's like to be a mother. But once that kid's out, your life has changed forevermore. So yeah. That identity shift on becoming a
right.
mother, something – here's another word, matrescence, the like adolescence –
oh.
Becoming an adult. This is becoming a mother. The idea of matrescence is a
very. Is this a new word, too?
It's been around, but my co-author, I'm actually writing a book on the emotional side of pregnancy and postpartum.
Right.
And we're really digging deep into this idea because that's the issue, right? You said, what's the biggest issue? It's like, what happened to me?
A total identity shift.
Total shift. Like who I was and who I am and all the things I'm losing and who I'm becoming. Yeah, I gained a kid, but what happened to me?
Sure.
See, we've been doing a women's series here on The Positive Mind for the last few months. And yes, we've been getting a lot of women calling us and thanking us for doing some programming. And this is a specific cohort of women out there. But last week we did a show on midlife crisis.
Love that.
So we didn't know this word last week, matrescence. But, you know, we realized that a midlife crisis is often an identity crisis in your 40s.
That's right.
In your 50s.
Right. Matrescence is specific to becoming a mother.
I could see it being.
Right? But we could, you know, let's expand it.
No. I like it. Just you guys have your matrescence and us men will have our. Well, we own the midlife crisis one.
Matrescence.
We buy red cars with convertibles and get younger women.
Oh,
and
great.
You matrescence women struggle with your ways of dealing with
becoming
a mother. Having a new identity.
Identity.
So you must see a total upheaval. I mean, I know the Motherhood Center basically helps women from when? Just for a short period of time, is that right, Paige?
So we provide different levels and tiers of service and treatment for moms. We, as Catherine said, we're really looking at the entire perinatal period. So, for example, if a woman who is interested in becoming pregnant and is on medication wants to come in for a consultation with a reproductive psychiatrist and find out, should I be on this medication? Should I go off it? We can help a woman at that point.
Okay.
But what we really do is provide extensive treatment through our day program for pregnant and postpartum moms that are having really acute symptoms of what we call perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, outpatient therapy, support groups, any way that we can provide treatment and support to pregnant and new moms that are suffering.
Okay. Yeah. So it's usually a 2-year period for new mothers, right? It's before they get pregnant. I now understand you're talking with women who are trying to get pregnant.
Trying. I do a lot of what I call pre-pregnancy consultations.
Okay.
So, I've been on Prozac since I was 18 after that breakup and I was so depressed, but now I'm 30 and I'm thinking about getting pregnant. I just didn't even think, should I stay on my Prozac or not?
Wow.
Is that a problem in pregnancy or not? So that's what
is it?
It depends.
It's a question.
Is it a problem? Generally speaking, no, it's not a problem if you need to stay on. But a lot of women have been on and haven't been thinking about it. They've been taking a medication like a vitamin, you know, as if it's a vitamin.
Mm.
So I always start with, look, if you don't need to be on a medication, don't be on it.
Right.
And sometimes you haven't thought about it because you haven't run into the idea like, oh, boy, I'm going to get pregnant. Is this a problem?
Mm-hmm.
Some people don't think about it till they're already pregnant, right? And then they come in at like
right.
6, 8, 11 weeks.
The fetus.
They're like, oh, what do I do?
Right.
So then we talk about it from that perspective.
Okay.
But that's the pre-pregnancy piece.
Right. And new mothers – They're helped every day with group. Say more about that. What's the typical program? A typical day here at the Motherhood Center.
So one of the most notable services that we provide is our day program, and we run a perinatal day program, and it is unlike anything that exists in New York City or New York State. And there's really only just a handful of programs that provide day programs for pregnant and postpartum moms. So moms are with us Monday through Friday from 9:45 until 2:45, and throughout the day they're participating in therapeutic support groups. So we like to utilize different best practices. So things like CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, IPT, DBT. We infuse the day with what we call expressive therapies. So we have trauma-informed yoga, art therapy, mindfulness and meditation.
Gosh.
We really look at treating a woman in this vulnerable state during her pregnancy or postpartum period where she's struggling with acute anxiety, depression, PTSD, OCD. We really like to treat her in a holistic manner.
So what is causing the anxiety? What is causing the depression? I mean, are women, like, confused? They say, I've been waiting all my life to have a baby, and now I have one, and all of a sudden I can't get out of bed.
Well, I think there are so many myths of motherhood out there, right? And I think one of the number one myths is once you become a mom, it's the most wonderful, beautiful thing that's ever happened to you.
Right.
And I would venture to believe more often than not, that is not the case. And I think it goes back to what Catherine was talking about earlier, is that identity shift. Like, I don't think anyone can prepare you for the transformation that you go through in becoming a mother. Everything that you give up, everything that changes, everything you used to do, everything you used to like, it's like having the rug ripped out from underneath of you. And so I think that that can contribute to a heightened anxiety in a lot of women, and a depression, and a longing for who they were before, and not really knowing what to do with these feelings.
So is there a mourning process? You have to say goodbye to my old self, the old person I was and now? Because we talked about that in the midlife crisis. Yes, that's the most effective way to get through it, to say, to assess, or what do we call it, Ben? The big assessment, right?
Yeah.
You know, or reckoning.
Yeah.
You know, that you look back on your whole past and you say, okay, that's over. That's what I was. But now I see, you know, I only have a limited amount of time left, and I should, you know, construct a self that is worth living with for the next 30, 40 years. So do mothers, new mothers, have to say goodbye to, you know, the freewheeling, loving, fancy foot-free lady that she was before?
I think that there's a level of that. I mentioned DBT earlier. It's a therapeutic modality that's a best practice with the perinatal population.
What
is it?
It
stands for dialectical behavioral therapy.
Okay.
There's a concept within DBT called radical acceptance that we really like to introduce to and encourage our moms to embrace, really making sense of and accepting the fact that they're entering a brand new chapter of their life, but at the same time encouraging them and helping them recognize that even with this new addition, they're still who they were before. Things have changed and things are different, but if they look deep enough inside of them, that person is there. Mm. And as overwhelming as the beginning feels, and as enveloping and stuck and trapped as moms can feel in those first 3 months in particular, because there's just no control of anything, slowly but surely, they get back in touch with who they used to be. So providing them with some hope and perspective that it isn't always going to be like this forever.
Mm. I'm going to take a stretch here. I'm going to ask you, be a mother with me, who's, or I'll be the mother. You be the mother, Catherine.
Okay.
And do some DBT right here. Like radical acceptance. I mean, I love the concept. I need some of that. I know all my clients, all my patients, it's okay if it's too much. You know, I know this is off the cuff, and it wasn't in our preparatory notes. But, I mean, radical acceptance, what is it you need to do in order to radically accept, okay, I'm here as a mother now, and I have a child that is taking all of my time? How do you come to a certain acceptance?
Well, I often say to moms, part of the reason why this is the biggest thing you'll ever do in your life is that you can't really give the kid back, right? You can get divorced.
Yeah.
You can drop out of school. You can change up a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But this kid's forever.
Right.
Right. Now, even if something tragic happens. You've still become a mother and had a loss. You're still a mother. Once a mother, always a mother. There is no returns on that.
Yes.
And
but you could give it to your husband and say, I'm going to go live in Florida.
I've had patients who felt that way, who could not deal with the new normal. Forget new normal. Like, what befell them, they felt like was an enormous mistake. They wanted nothing to do with it, even if they wanted the child throughout the pregnancy and thought it was a great idea.
Mm.
You know, they want to escape. They want to return that kid. They think this was a giant, you know, this is a giant mistake.
I guess they also must through the process of therapy realize, oh, I really did this to please somebody. Oh. You know, maybe I thought I wanted a kid, but then right. I realized I'm really doing this because my sisters have kids or my mother wants me to have a kid or, you know.
Well, to part of what DBT, what happens in this dialectical behavioral therapy is, and I'll sometimes use this with women, I'll say to them, before you didn't want, you know, and here you are postpartum, you don't want this kid, you're miserable, you think it was the worst thing you ever did. Mm. But guess what? You actually really wanted a kid before. You can't remember that. Mm. Or you did IVF. I've had people who've wanted to terminate IVF pregnancies. At one point, they wanted those kids so much they went through a process. Now, they could have been conflicted before. Who were they doing it for? There are many questions. Mm-hmm. But you can help people see that you can hold two opposite feelings together at the same time, right? That you can both have wanted a child, oh, and you don't want a child. You can love that child and hate that child, yeah. right? Both those things exist at the same time. They do not, they're not mutually exclusive, even though they feel like it.
We're talking with Paige Bellenbaum and Catherine Berndorf of the Motherhood Center. Thank you both for being here. I'm wondering what you both make of, there's a sort of movement that we're seeing where younger people are delaying marriage and delaying parenthood. And we're seeing that statistically people are having children later on, getting married later on. I spoke recently to a woman whose daughter was struggling to conceive in her 30s. And the woman told me, I'm so glad that I had kids when I was in my 20s. And I had went through all the struggles that came with that. Now, she didn't use the word matrescence, but I know now that's what she was referring to. I'm wondering, what do you think about the difference in age? What do you think about when a person chooses to have a child and the effect that that can have? Can it make it more difficult having children later on, psychologically, physically? What do you think about that?
Well,
we're both looking at each other. I mean, I think I'll go first. I think it, you know, what we know about perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, postpartum depression, is that they do not discriminate. You could be 18, you could be 45. There are risk factors that make women more vulnerable to potentially acquiring a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder. But I think, you know, there's benefits and drawbacks to either being young or being older. I think it really is based on the individual. I know, you know, one of the things that women who come to the Motherhood Center for the day program struggle with quite a bit is, you know, we're in this new phase of life. We've been here for a while as women where, you know, we're really trying to do everything. We're trying to be mothers. We're trying to be wives. We're trying to be professionals. We're trying to keep the house in order. We're trying to do all of these things. And we hear a lot from women, and I'd say the average age of women who do come to the day program is probably in the mid 30s, you know, some earlier, some later, but they're really grappling with their career now that they've become a mother. And what does it mean? You know, how am I going to get back and do the things I did before? You know, like, how did I even do those things to begin with? So
is it like I don't have the energy or is it just I'm anxious all the time and I can't imagine doing anything other than take care of the baby?
It has a lot to do with that identity shift, right? Okay. Like women who suffer from anxiety and or depression in the postpartum period, it's almost like everything they know of themselves to be true is taken away and they're left naked. They could have been, you know, a high corporate attorney, you know, managing 700 people, mm-hmm. but when overcome by the seriousness and acuity of anxiety and depression, they feel like they can't even decide what pair of pants to put on in the morning. And so it's just, it takes them over.
Yeah. What about shame? You go ahead. Follow up, because I do want to ask about shame. There must be a tremendous amount of shame. First, I'm not fulfilling my function. I'm not doing my social role. I don't know who I am. I don't know how to perform, you know, show up for this child.
Shame is a huge problem, and I think that's what keeps the stigma and the secrecy around these kinds of illnesses. So you hit the nail on the head. This is why we exist, right? This is why we want to be on your radio show talking about it, because there's nothing to be ashamed of, right? If 20% of women are struggling with postpartum depression and more are struggling with anxiety disorders, you know, some that they had before, some that they had, you know, that they got worse during, some that started during or after, we got to be talking about it like night and day, because we want to normalize it. Not that it's normal, so to speak, but that it happens, it's common. That's the word, right? Yeah. That it happens so commonly and so frequently. And if we don't talk about it, we sit with our shame and we're embarrassed. And we were these competent people once who are now withering and isolated and depressed and feel like we can't do anything and are a terrible mother. And, you know, we can't do any of our old roles. I mean, that's terrible for everybody, for yourself, sure, for the baby, for the workplace, all the, you know, money lost, not being able to get back to your job, mm-hmm, or whatever it is, mm-hmm, and fulfill your own destiny.
Right, right. See, this is why we want to bring this to you here on the radio, WBAI. One in five women, maybe more. I mean, we haven't even talked about the issue of choosing to become a mother. I mean, there's so societally so many messages sent to women about whether to become mothers, whether to drop even that idea of being a mother, and the stresses and anxiety about making the choice not to. So, you know, there's a lot on women's plate in terms of becoming a mother, and actually being a mother, a new mother especially. I suspect it's more than one in five. You know, I mean, think of your own mother having a baby.
They didn't know what to call it.
They didn't have this term postpartum depression 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
But, you know, it's hard not to think that you're going through a tremendous hormonal shift, a tremendous body change, in addition to now, which I think is a helpful word, matrescence.
Right.
That it's got to be much more than that. So we're glad to be bringing this to our audience. So thank you both for doing this. But, yeah, follow up with this.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Kevin. And when I was on the show last time, I think I mentioned that for clinicians who work in the field of postpartum depression, we believe it to be more like one in three. And I'll give you an example why.
Yeah.
If anybody read the headlines over the past week, there was a very tragic story about a new mother who went to her OBGYN. She admitted to having depression and anxiety and some scary thoughts and fears of hurting the baby. And her doctor called the police, and she was taken away. And she was held in a psych ER, I believe, for 10 hours before she was released without her baby. Now, this is greatly unfortunate, and one of the primary reasons why we believe it's more like one in three, because our society has such an unfortunate stigma around mental health, especially maternal mental health. Women are afraid, and you talked about shame earlier. There is such a shame and guilt and fear of, if I tell somebody, what if they take my baby away? What if they lock me up? What if, you know, what if something terrible happens? I should just keep it to myself because I don't want those things to happen. And then they end up suffering silently.
This is an extreme case. The psychiatrist might be able to help us here. I mean, what a useful man. I know, you know, that woman in Texas 10 years ago now.
Andrea Yates.
You know,
right?
I mean, and, you know, come on. I
mean,
you know, I know people that wanted to take a hard line on that and send her to jail. And you know, but I mean, even at the time when I didn't know so much about postpartum, I thought a mother doing that is just definitely on the mental health spectrum. There's something going on.
Thank you very much. I always say, I do a lot of media around that issue of infanticide and maternal deaths. Not maternal, but, you know, hurting or killing your kids. And what mother in their right mind would do that?
Yeah.
No, but it doesn't make you a criminal. It makes you mentally ill. But somehow we did not get that message. We're one of the only cultures and societies that criminalizes these women. In other countries, they see it as illness. They don't go to jail. They get help.
And then
they have to live with the consequences once they're well of knowing what happened. Isn't that jail and hell enough?
Exactly.
Right? But here we throw you in jail and we could give you the death penalty. That's insane, if I may say.
No, it is insane.
Right? Andrea Yates, just because it's such an important and it was such a landmark case, was psychotic. Okay?
No question.
We haven't even mentioned that word here yet, but that's very different. Paige is talking about perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. Psychosis, postpartum psychosis, is 1 in 1,000. Okay? Very uncommon. It's an absolute psychiatric and medical emergency, straight to the hospital for both safety of the mom and safety of the baby. Because in that condition, the mom who believes there's a lack of touch with reality. That's what psychosis mm-hmm. means, right? And they believe, you know, they're hallucinating. They believe certain things, often very mm-hmm. hyper-religious, or believe that something.
Or they think something might be good is actually bad. I'll give my child some poison or something.
And I'll save them, right?
Right.
So in the case of Andrea Yates, you know, she believed that that she was such a bad person, that she was so fundamentally flawed that her kids would be bad, and that if she killed them and they could ascend to heaven, mm-hmm. that they would be saved, which is a delusion,
right?
A fixed false belief that she held on to very strongly, so strong enough and in such a complete state that she could systematically kill them and believe what she was doing was better for them.
Right, right. Since I'm so bad and I'll poison you with my personality, with who I am, let God take care of you. And
so well
you
said.
And your innocence.
Exactly.
And you'll live forever in heaven.
That's right.
Yeah, if that's not psychosis, you know.
What is?
We don't know what is.
Right.
So how is she doing nowadays? Do you know?
I do, because I'm involved, very involved on the board of Postpartum Support International.
And say that again.
Postpartum Support International.
Right, right.
And it's a fabulous organization that's been around for 30 years now. And it's gotten bigger and bigger and trying to help more and more women. But the lawyer who worked to help Andrea Yates, to help that case be understood, and his wife George Parnum and his wife Mary Parnum are very active in the organization. And, you know, Andrea, they visit with Andrea. They tend to the graves. I mean, they are really committed. They are the most lovely, wonderful people who really took this case on and tried to help educate. You know, they got the appeal overturned, you know, so she is forever in a psychiatric facility, but she, you know, she's well, and she knows what happened. And that's, she has to live with that forever. Can you imagine?
Tough stuff.
So we could go on for. So this is what makes the news, by the way.
Yeah.
This is what gets sensationalized in the news. And then everybody thinks, as Paige was saying, I can't tell my doctor what's wrong because I had a thought of putting my baby in the microwave. Or when I walked by that knife, I felt like it could jump in my hand and I might kill my kid.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very nervous about it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they're nervous about it means they're not going to act on it.
Right. Or the fact that they even say it out loud.
Right.
I mean.
But many of them don't because they're so busy worrying that if they tell us, we're going to throw them in jail.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Tell us, because they're very common anxious thoughts.
Right.
Like
a mild pathology doesn't have to be psychosis.
No. And guess what? Even women without pathology have those intrusive, violent thoughts about harm coming to their babies when they're born, right? Because they're anxious. Mm. Like new moms, anxiety is hardly pathologic in that state. It's it's actually quite adaptive and Darwinian, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to protect this completely dependent being. Mm. So you better be on it, right? You better be vigilant.
Yeah.
And sometimes it becomes too much.
It can, you know, if I had a baby, it would take away all my anxiety. You know,
Sorry, that's a good one.
Wouldn't that do it for you too, Ben?
I don't know.
No, when I see an infant, you know, to think that you get to hold this baby, you know, hours a day. I mean, I'm presenting the opposite thing that you deal with. But I'm wondering, like, if for some women that it cures an anxiety that, okay, now I do have a baby. I have something that I can, you know, I can bond with and it's mine and, you know, I can treat and I don't have to focus on me so much, you know. I know this is off topic, but
you bring up an interesting point, which is some of the hormones in pregnancy, progesterone and its metabolite called allopregnanolone, is actually considered to be anti-anxiety. So some women do get a reprieve during pregnancy and they feel like soothed and better and relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, Paige, maybe you want to answer this. I don't think that most people feel like, but some do.
Yeah.
Some do. Some are blissed out. You know, there's that sliver that is like, God, the baby was really, you know, soothed me. And I don't think a baby's ever cured anyone's anxiety. Would you? Yeah.
I can't say I've heard that to be true. but I do think it's important to know because, getting back to that concept of a myth of motherhood, I think a lot of people go into the concept of motherhood thinking that they're going to have that experience. And it can be so much more disappointing
Beautiful.
When they don't.
Right.
And I like to share a story from my own experience when I had postpartum depression and anxiety after my son was born. I remember sitting in the park with him, miserable, and it was like the first time I'd made it outside of the house in a really long time. And there was this woman sitting next to me, and she had this beautiful fat baby with big rosy cheeks and a pink outfit on and blanket, and she was bouncing the baby, and she looked at me and she said, "Isn't this the greatest thing that ever happened to you?" And I looked at her and I said, "No. This is the worst thing I've ever done. Sometimes I wish I never did it. I have no idea what I'm doing." And her smile started to fade, and the tears started to roll down her face, and she said, "Thank you so much for saying that. I feel the same way."
Right.
And I think more often than not, we're going to find that it is common to feel anxious and depressed and a whole litany of different emotional reactions to this enormous responsibility. Mm. It's giving permission to women to say it's good and it's bad, as Catherine was saying. Maybe it feels more bad right now than it does good. Mm. But it's we don't have to pretend like it's this magical, beautiful thing because it's hard.
Yeah. Well, on the second half of the show, we'll talk about a little bit about support. Like, how do these women get support aside from you? We also do want to take your calls, 212-757-5555. We have a reproductive psychiatrist in the house, and also Paige Ballenbaum, the director of the Motherhood Center here in New York City. Yes, anything you want to share with us about your experience? We'd love to hear. Here's a question. What medication do you – well, let's wait for some. Yeah, what's the most prescribed medication for new mothers? I mean, don't answer. We'll have them when they come back. But also, yeah, give us a call, 212-757-5555. You're listening to The Positive Mind on WBAI.
You're listening to The Positive Mind here on WBAI. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue and our guests today, Catherine Berndorf and Paige Bellenbaum of the Motherhood Center. Great to have you with us. And we're taking your calls at 212-757-5555 as we continue this discussion on motherhood and matrescence, a word I learned today and I won't soon forget.
Yes.
Matrescence, the process of becoming a mother. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. So learning every day.
Talk more about reproductive psychiatry. Like in the middle of the country, are there reproductive psychiatrists? Are there a lot of them in the country? I mean, is it a growing field, et cetera?
Yes, no, yes. yes, there are not a lot of us in the country or internationally. We have a great listserv. You know, we have a way to communicate all of us, and we try to talk about what's happening in your country or in your part of the world. But no, I would say that there's the majority of us are on the coasts, you know, or in academic
California
centers,
for sure,
and New York and
Vermont. I would say.
And probably not so many in the middle. Chicago is quite a has a lot. Yeah,
okay.
Very progressive city. Mm-hmm. So you know, it depends. But by the way, even if we exist in numbers in certain cities, people don't know we're around. So they don't know it's a specialty, right? They don't know it exists. So it is a much newer field than, you know, the old child and adolescent psychiatry or geriatric psychiatry. It's a much newer
so
field.
So when you conceived of the Motherhood Center, did you think of having a reproductive psychiatrist on in, you know, when you thought up this center? Or did you bring one on as things went along? Can you say anything about that?
Well, essentially, since I'm one of the co-founders.
There you go.
Right?
That'll do it.
I thought,
Paige, you're the director. You're not
the director.
Founder. Oh,
no.
See,
she's
here.
The third member of our team.
Oh, okay.
So I had a business partner
who
found me as a reasonably known reproductive psychiatrist and said, hey, I'm looking for some area where things are lacking.
Yeah.
And I was like, hello? Here,
really?
Like, and so
really?
We sort of over time came together because I started a program at Cornell in 2002, training residents like me who had been training in the 90s, couldn't find anyone to teach me this stuff. Mm. I would knock on doors and be like, just tell, do you have patients with postpartum? Or what do you do? And they're like, what?
Mm.
What? No. You know, or no, there's no problem. We were not talking about it. I was like the grim. I was the grim reaper.
Really?
And I was like, can someone teach me? Can someone talk to me about this? So I went to Chicago. I won't tell you my long history, but when I came back to New York in 2002, Cornell had the foresight. They said, start a program in this thing you call reproductive psychiatry.
Okay.
Like, get it going. Teach people.
Mm.
And it was great because it was a way to begin to talk about, learn about this body of knowledge that we really didn't know much about.
Mm. We have a call, but I would say there's got to be a great proportion of women who don't seek help.
Oh.
As opposed to those that do. We'll get to that in a second. Let's take a call.
Yeah, we have Freddie on the line. Hello, Freddie, you there?
Yes, yes. How you doing, guys?
Good, Freddie.
Thanks for calling in.
Are you a new mother, Freddie?
I'm a new mom and a dad at the same time. I'm raising two boys by myself.
Oh, boy. Tell us about it. Okay, tell us about it.
It's really, really overwhelming, like the world on my shoulders, and I work full-time, two jobs.
So what did you want to ask Paige and Catherine today?
There's a lot that, you know, it goes both ways, I believe. I just, you know, experiencing some, you know, sometimes I go through a little bit of depression, you know, mentally stressed, body, everything. Like, but it goes through time to time. I just try, I don't know how I make it by every day. I just thank God every day I make it by. I make it through, through the day to accomplish everything I have to do as a father.
Well, good for you because you got a lot on your plate, and I don't even know. You know, it's remarkable, right? And why wouldn't you be stressed? And just so you know, dads have postpartum depression too.
Yes, they do.
10 to 15%. It's no small number, and that's even less talked about. So good for you. It's so nice that you called in to bring this up because I think people were just starting to talk about the moms. I mean, the dads really haven't been talked about.
Yes. Right.
Did you notice a change when they were first born? When your sons were first born?
No, I just thought it was a good feeling to be a father again, because I already raised four kids with my ex-wife, but I had help back then 20 years ago. I'm 49 years old, and 17 years later, I decided to have children again with a relationship that I got involved 4 years ago, and it turned out to be a nightmare, and she just gave up the kids, and I stepped in as a father, and I took responsibility on my children. I just got the other brother. I got him about a year and a half ago. He's 3 years old now, and the other one is 4 years old. I got him when he was 18 months through the family court. I took full custody of him, and I recently lost my job about a year ago. I got evicted from my old apartment. Wow. You know, so it's been nonstop running 24 hours a day. I do homework, I cook, I clean.
Gosh.
Do you have
any support, Freddie? Do you have any support? I mean, how are you doing?
No, I don't have any support at all, really, at all. I just support in a way where I just get a little bit of public assistance.
Okay.
And mentally, I'm very strong-minded because, you know, sure. I came from a very poor family.
Yeah, you have resilience going for you. I can hear that.
Yeah. My children smile every day. So that's a good thing.
You're doing a good
and
job.
They say they love me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Freddie, you're doing heroic work.
Yes.
Thank you for being such a strong father figure.
Yeah. To a lot of fathers out there, keep your heads up, and mothers that are raising their children by themselves.
Wow. Thanks for calling us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, talk about fathers. I mean, they must be tough watching your wife go through this.
Yeah, I like to tell the story. The first week we opened the Motherhood Center, which was about 10 or 11 months ago, we had three moms, three little babies.
Mm-hmm.
People, it was, you know, everybody was getting their sea legs. You know, we just didn't, you know, we were figuring it all out. But these women were really sick, and we had their babies. And on the Friday when the dads, there happened to be three dads were the partners, came to pick up the moms, they were sitting on the couch in the waiting room, heads like hanging between their legs, looking horrible.
Yeah.
And we looked at them and we thought, oh my God, how are we going to help these guys? We hadn't thought about it yet,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, we know about it, but we were worried about 25,000 other things. And one of our, you know, God bless her, one of our social workers whose husband's a psychiatrist, she said, I'm going to call my husband and get him over here. He's going to run a dad's group right now.
Is that right?
So that's how our dad's group started, right?
Wow.
So she called him up, and he is like a fabulous guy who just came on over and said, let's go. So the afternoon after that first week when the program ended that day, we invited the dads into the room with this wonderful psychiatrist, and he just, you know, said, what's up? How's it going?
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys making it?
Mm.
Let me give you some support. And we've had a dad's group ever since.
Fantastic. So it must be like, yes, I can imagine being a father and all of a sudden, well, wait a second, I didn't want this. I don't want this. I don't have it. I don't have
the energy.
I don't have the identity. I don't have the internal fortitude to do it. I can't,
Or how am I going to support my wife who's
struggling?
Yes, now I have
not one, but two
right.
to or care about.
I didn't sign up for this. You know, like this
right.
isn't what I thought was going to happen. And I think, you know, we see fathers on the spectrum, some that are, we see partners that are on the spectrum, some that are very eager to find ways to support their wife or the mother of their child. And then others that are so acutely overwhelmed by the stress of having to care for a baby and for their wife or the mother of their baby. It can be
mm-hmm.
really challenging. And the sense mm-hmm. of like, oh my God, what is happening? So to be able to provide a safe space for them to be able to speak to other partners around the same struggles
right.
and have that sense of community, it really, it's the same magic
yeah.
that we're able to give to our moms in the day program. It's
mm-hmm.
that sense of community. I'm not alone. Other people are going through this too.
212-757-5555. 212-757-5555. Take us through a success story. I'm finding myself getting a little – do we have a call?
We do have a caller.
Let's take the caller.
We have Kathy on the line. Hello, Kathy.
Yes, hello.
Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Kathy.
Thank you for taking my call. This is a very interesting topic to me. I, you know, have two children that are adults now, but, I mean, all the experience has affected my whole life, you know, of having giving birth and the treatment that was so, well, I had one baby in the 70s and another one in the 90s, my second one. So I had fought for a lot of the changes in the 70s, you know, to have fathers in the delivery room, and because I was a nursing student at the time and, you know, saw that the way it was, the old-fashioned way was no good. But then in the 90s, it was a little too much with my husband didn't understand the physical changes that I had gone through, because I seemed fine. I was like, oh, okay, just that's over, you know. And I needed to sleep, and he just, you know, I couldn't get him to understand, and no one supported me, the staff. I had a midwife, and I thought they would be more supportive, but it was just physically, of course I was older, but it was, I was so exhausted, and when I came home I was exhausted at both times, and I wanted to leave my husband both times, and wow. Just, you know, because of his not understanding, and I realized that that's just that nobody is educated, even the women, us women ourselves, we're not told, you know, exactly, like, what to expect, even on the physical level, you know, when you get home.
Well, that,
you think you can go back, you can go to the store, you can go do this, you can start exercising, and I see the younger girls are even doing that, trying that right away, you know.
Yeah.
And they're probably miserable.
That's,
I mean,
yeah,
listen, you bring up a really important point about education. You know, it's not just that new dads and new partners don't know and don't get it. Like you said, new moms don't know and don't get it. Even those of us in the healthcare fields don't know and don't get it. They think it's just, oh, you know, you're just, of course you're tired, and of course you're not sleeping, and of course you feel, you know, these things because you just had a baby. Okay, well then, why do I feel hopeless and not connected to my baby, and like I want to run away, and like you said, like divorce your husband. That's not regular.
Do you run across that a lot? I mean, do you hear
where
I not only want to get rid of the baby, I want to get rid of the husband too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yes, because he was an added, you know, a demand. You
burden.
Know? So I was like, yes, an added thing that I had to do. He was saying, why, you don't have any time for me. Like,
we hear this a lot,
right?
Yeah.
Right? This new, like, two becomes three. And if you are the type of partner who was, you know, good at paying attention and doing things for your husband, even, you know, preparing meals or doing something nice, baby comes along and gets all the attention.
Mm. Kathy, you also said that it was lasting a long time afterwards. When you got home, there was nobody there to help you. But I got the sense also that you dealt with this for a few years. Is that true?
Well, with my second baby, it was longer, and I actually got pneumonia when she was almost two, and I went into, like, a postpartum. I had been nursing her, and so it was like a sudden weaning because of the being in the hospital, and I know, you know, I had weird thoughts, really weird thoughts. And I've just recently read that sometimes if you know, nursing mothers have postpartum depression after weaning, not after immediately after the birth.
Okay.
That can happen. That's true. That it often comes in the form of anxiety, but can also be depression or those kinds of thoughts. It's a really big hormonal shift right after the birth, and also, you know, with weaning. And and while we're not, it's not entirely, you know, postpartum problems, illnesses are not entirely caused by those hormonal shifts. They certainly complicate it, right? But that's not the only thing, you know, the only reason they happen.
Kathy, thank you so much for calling.
Okay, you will.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
We have another call, Jill on the line. I'm sorry, Ben, you take care of it.
Yeah, we'll get to her in just a moment. Oh. We got to transfer her in.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
okay.
That's okay.
Well, so So, yeah, you know, get rid of the husband, too. I mean, there's so much. I'm getting a sense of what's a success story? Tell us a success story. I mean, how do these – all right, we have Jill on the line.
Okay.
All right, but we'll return to this. Go ahead.
How appropriate that I just came into you saying success story. I was a young teenage mom, and I did, in hindsight, I did experience postpartum. But one thing about me, my kids were always like a dream of mine. Maybe due to some of the traumas that I experienced as a child growing up, I heard that can happen.
Yeah.
But through it all and all of our struggles we've had, I wouldn't do it any different. I probably would multiply them by two. So I don't know if that goes, I don't know if that's a success story, but we made it through the hurricane, should I say. But my point that I was calling to say was, could it be our expectations have become unnatural, like, in thinking that we can control it? And maybe it should just be more, the only thing we should expect is to have to clean poop, take care of ourselves, and sleep. And, you know, everything else will just kind of fall into place. In hindsight, I feel like that was...
If you put less pressure on yourself, if you minimized your expectations of yourself, you're wondering if that would have been more effective for you.
Yes. This society and the way the world is now, we have to manage a certain way. I realize that. But if we can just all become more aware, if that's possible, if that's the answer, the remedy.
Jill, thanks. Thanks for calling. Let's hear what they have to say. Go ahead.
We like to visit the concept frequently at the Motherhood Center of the perfect mother versus the good enough mother. The good enough mother is a concept that originated many years ago by a psychoanalyst by the name of Winnicott. And in doing so, we challenge moms to, sometimes we'll say, let's draw on a loose piece of paper. Like, what does the perfect mother look like? Oh, she dresses well, she exercises, her makeup and hair is always done, her kids look perfect, she's running around, going to the gym, this and the other thing. Okay, well, what's the good enough mother look like? Well, maybe she does laundry once a week, maybe she lets the dishes pile up, maybe she, you know, wears the same outfit two times in a day. Really helping women exercise this concept of good enough, and that it's okay to be good enough, and that actually being a good enough mother is better for your child in the long run, because if you're perfect all the time, you're not showing your child what the world is like on the outside. Right. So once they get there, they're unprepared. If you can be good enough and just do enough, then you're doing the best that you can. And I think this really, really dangerous word that exists, and when I run groups at the Motherhood Center, I don't allow it in the group room. It's that word, the word should. It is such a powerful word, and should means you've done something wrong. Somebody did something right.
Should is a bummer.
It's a bummer. And so we really encourage women not to use it. We're not allowed to use it. It needs to be kicked out of the Webster Dictionary. Yep.
Yeah. It strikes me as a good place for husbands to help, to say, look, you don't have to be perfect today. What would be a good enough day to get way to get through it, and how can I help you?
Right.
So this is a really good question, Jill. So there are so many expectations on a new mother. I mean, is that part of the therapy process to, like, chill down, lower these expectations?
Yeah, I think women think that they're going to do everything they did before they had this kid, right? And they
but
may.
But better.
Right? And they may, but not right away, and certainly not without compromises, because you don't just pick up a whole nother being for whom you're responsible and live life exactly as you did. It's impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
It's impossible.
Right.
So I think we have to expect imperfections and struggles and compromises and this looking at oneself and thinking like, okay, well, how do I prioritize? Because I can't just do what I did. And how do you not get resentful when you have to put your kid first for whatever their needs are in this moment? Mm-hmm. But how do you also take care of yourself so that you don't lose it? Right? It's very complicated. And that's part of this idea of matrescence on becoming a mother and figuring out what the kind of new normal is going to be in this chapter of your life.
I see such potential for it, you know, for these motherhood centers popping up, because it's a way really to educate people about psychology. These are things and issues that people never, ever thought they'd have to run into. These are supposedly the functioning normal people in our society. They show up, they have an event, they have a child, And all of a sudden, they have to become another person, a totally different being. And through that process, they go through the whole spectrum of emotional issues that we see as psychologists and therapists. Mm-hmm. So I think the treatments that you provide really are going to be foundational for other treatments, people in other walks of life, people changing their careers, people really... And in
transition.
In our society, in American society, more than probably any other society, people change their identities every 10 years, if not less.
And that's a time of reconciliation, right? And looking inward and figuring out who you are and what this next chapter is going to be, back to your midlife crisis thing. I mean,
yes.
It's times of these transitions where we really have to think about who we were, mourn that loss, say goodbye to things that were, and figure out what the rest is going to look like.
We have less than 2 minutes. I just wanted to take one more quick call. We have Evelyn on the line. Hi, Evelyn. We're pressed for time, but we did want to hear from you today.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Evelyn.
Thank you. I was just some years back here in Harlem. There was a woman on 145th Street that she strapped her top to herself, and she fell out of the window. I want to say fell, but she jumped out of the window. She was a woman that I understand that she was Jewish. She was in a community that was very little of her own people were around her.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, how do we communicate with people, even culturally? At that particular time, the community was just changing. I tend to want to talk to women that I know or that I feel some sort of relationship to. We say, well, how's the baby this morning? And what such and such? Since then, I have become a doula, a postpartum doula. Based on just hearing that story, it was just really so sad. I became a postpartum doula with Northern Manhattan Prenatal Partnership. And I said, how do we recognize the signs in a community? And also when there are people from all different backgrounds, as you guys were discussing earlier.
Okay, Evelyn, thank you for the call. We have 1 minute, ladies. Can you address that?
So Dr. Berndorf and I are very familiar with that story. It was very tragic. And the child did end up surviving. The mother, unfortunately, did not. It was a story that really captured everybody's attention. And as Catherine said earlier, it's unfortunate that this is when we pay attention when a crisis happens. But you're hitting on something incredibly important, is that, and that was an example of postpartum psychosis, like we were speaking of earlier, is that what we need to do is this concept of education, right? We need to educate more people of how common this is, but it can't be a one-size-fits-all. Different cultures that are out there, different communities experience mental health differently. Mm-hmm. So we have to be able to speak to communities differently to help them understand that it's a very normal thing. And lastly, congratulations to you for becoming a postpartum doula.
Amazing.
We need more of you in the world. And I would leave you with one simple question. If you see a mom that looks like she's struggling, you can go up to her and say, how are you doing? So many moms are asked, how's the baby? How's he sleeping? This day and the other thing. How are you doing? How are you feeling? What's this like for you?
Wow. Wow. How has your life changed? Did you change your life today? Well, becoming a mother will do it for you. Thank you, ladies, so much.
Thanks to everyone out there.
Kathy Berndorf and Paige Bellenbaum of the Motherhood Center. You're listening to The Positive 9 on WBAI 99.5 in New York City. Ben, thanks for coming along.
Of course, and we'll see everyone tomorrow, same time, same place, 1 p.m. Take care.